Mainframe is brought to you by Authority Rainmaker, a carefully designed live educational experience that presents a complete and effective online marketing strategy to help you immediately accelerate your business. Don't miss the opportunity to see Dan Pink, Sally Hogshead, punk legend Henry Rollins, and many other incredible speakers live. Not to mention the secret sauce of it all, building real-world relationships with other attendees. Get all the details right now at rainmaker.fm/event. And we look forward to seeing you in Denver, Colorado this May. That's rainmaker.fm/event.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Chris Garrett. I'm the Chief Digital Officer of Copyblogger Media. And I'm here today with my co-host, Tony Clark, who's the COO of Copyblogger Media. And this is The Mainframe. Today, we're going to talk about the simple secret behind Copyblogger's eight-figure business. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Chris?
Now we've got through that introduction, I think we're going to be doing really good. It was a bit of a struggle reading from a script, but it's all good. Today, we're going to be talking about the simple secret behind Copyblogger's eight-figure business. And I do have to emphasize that simple is in air quotes. You can't see these air quotes, but I'm holding up my fingers right now. Because when we say simple, we don't mean easy eight-figure business. We mean there's a simple secret behind it. So with all that intrigue and curiosity built up, what is the secret behind Copyblogger's eight-figure business?
It's like a lot of things, there is a formula you can follow. And the key is understanding that though the formula is simple, it does require work. And the basic formula is figuring out what your customers want and then delivering that in a way that delights them. And a lot of times you can see that through just following what it is that your customers are asking for, what they're saying, how they're communicating with you. And it's a process that we call just doing what's indicated. It's just following through on things that you're seeing coming up in the marketplace surrounding your community and your audience.
So you packed a lot of information into that as a strategy, as an approach. Let's go back to the early days of Copyblogger and use that as a case study to explain what you mean. So how did that come about? How did the Copyblogger we know today, how did that start out and how did it get to be this eight-figure business? Eight figures on its own sounds like quite a wild claim. How did we get there?
Slowly building over time. And it started out with, it's still a lot of hard work, but it started out with Ryan building an audience through the Copyblogger blog with the intent that he was going to build this audience to present them with something, a product to sell. And by starting out with an audience, you get a clear picture of what it is you need to develop. One of the biggest mistakes people make is trying to develop a product before they have an audience or a customer segment to sell that product to. You see it all the time in the tech world and the software world. A group of software guys will get together, come up with this great idea. This is the next whatever, the next Twitter, the next Uber, without really understanding what it is the market is looking for. But they know this would be a cool product. So they build the product first and then try and take it to a customer, to an audience. Our approach has always been to build the audience first.
Yeah, so they're talking about build it and they will come. And we're talking about building an audience, finding out what they want and need, and trying to solve their problems.
Exactly. It's the approach we call minimum viable audience, and then to create a minimal viable product.
So when you were talking about earlier doing what's indicated, we've built the audience. How do you know what they're indicating? How do you work out where to go with that?
They'll tell you. Most of the time, you can, if you know your audience well, that's another benefit of building an audience first, is it's more than just an audience. It's a community. It is a group of people who, they may not be all alike, but they have needs that need to be fulfilled. They have missing elements in their business or in their marketing or in their approach to how they approach their industry and their marketplace that needs something to help them accelerate that. And a lot of times you can find that out just by listening to your audience, because they will tell you very clearly what it is that they need, what's missing. And oftentimes they'll even present ideas on, I wish I had this, or I wish I understood this, or if I only had this piece of information or this tool, I would be able to really take things to the next level. And that, by instead of forcing something on an audience of this is what you need, you listen first, you sit back, and it will, through that kind of communication, you will see patterns emerge, and it will become very clear what is being indicated that this audience, this particular audience that you've created, needs, and what's missing from what they have right now.
And we're seeing that a lot with the Rainmaker platform. Every release, we put things out, we put new things out, and we get a flood of people saying, that's great, now can you make it do this?
Exactly, yeah.
And that leads us nicely to the concept of the minimum viable product. So you talked about the minimum viable audience, that's gathering an audience that's big enough that they tell you what they want. But the minimum viable product, that seems to have been skewed in the marketplace, the whole concept. People seem to have taken it and run in the wrong direction. Do you see the same thing?
Oh, yeah. And it's terrible, because a lot of what I did previously when I was in the consulting world and doing enterprise software, and then later on when I started working on Teaching Sales with Brian, was doing this approach of iterative development and sort of agile before agile was cool, lean before lean was cool. And this whole minimal viable product before it even became a thing, an MVP. And the problem is that over time, each of those things I talked about, agile, lean development, and MVPs, have been skewed to be more about what is the quickest and easiest piece of crap that we can get out the door, just so we can start making money. And that's not the intent of it at all. But that, you're right, that's kind of how it's become in the marketplace for a lot of people that are using those terms and using it as an excuse to put together a low-quality product in a sense of trying to just get something out.
Yeah, you even see apps and tools that are pretty much just shells of a product. It's practically just a UI with nothing behind it. But they're still selling it as a product to get people to register. They're still promoting the heck out of it and then doing growth hacking, all those things. And that's not the philosophy you and Brian had at the start, and it's certainly not what we do right now. So how did you see the MVP when you were developing those first products?
It's about delivering small bits of quality and then building on those small bits of quality. So you have to start out with something of value. A lot of people focus on the minimum of minimal viable product versus the viable. And the viable is actually the most important part of it, of the minimum viable product, because it's got to be something that's usable. So one of the things that we focused on was what was the smallest amount of information that we could deliver in Teaching Sales. And there was two reasons for it. One, because it was just the two of us. I mean, Brian was doing the marketing and the writing and working on a lot of the information. I was doing everything else. I was doing all the coding. I was doing all the operational stuff, plus also putting together content. So because there was only the two of us, we needed to find a way to do the minimum we could do that was still a high level of value and quality that people, when they bought it, they wouldn't say, wow, this was a ripoff. But the other side of it is also because you don't want to do too much before you understand how the market's going to react to it. So there's two key pieces of a minimum viable product from a standpoint of actually building a successful business. One is, what is the minimum quality level you can get in there so that you can deliver something that's actually of value? And two, what can you put in there that's not too much so that you can iterate and evolve the product in a way that better meets the customer's needs. And if you do too much up front, you're basically having to dump a product on them versus this is a starter that we can grow on and we can work on together.
Yeah, and I think the key part that I've been exposed to over the years talking to you and talking to Brian is that it's to validate your ideas and validate the marketplace and to learn and absorb from the customers, not as a quick way to make cash. Now, obviously, it is a really good way of bootstrapping, making some money, and you know, it's a really good launch process. And Copyblogger has grown because of it, but it's not with the goal of making money directly. It's more, we have this idea as a product, let's see if the market accepts that and runs with it and really wants it, right?
Right. And you will make money if you provide quality. And one of the things that we did with our very first product, Teaching Sells, was we knew that if we were to build this entire vision of what we wanted this to be and then put it to the audience, it would be not only overwhelming, but it would be wrong. It would be skewed. It would be, there would be too much of the kind of information we thought that they needed versus the type of information that they would request. So we use a lot of pilot releases and charter releases because none of the products that we release to the public are ever beta, unless we do a public beta, which is rare. A lot of times we'll do a small private beta and then we'll do a pilot release. The difference is that the release of the product is a production level quality product. It just doesn't have all the features yet. And the intent is that our pilot group or our charter group helps to get to evolve that product into something that they really need by providing feedback and providing, well, this is what feature we need, or this is the information we need. We need this simpler. We need this a little bit more in depth. And by helping us evolve that product, they're getting it at a lower price. They're getting it on the ground floor, but they're still getting a quality product. It's not here's a beta piece of junk. We want you to find the bugs in it kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Let's drill into this a little bit. Before we go too far with the conceptual side, let's drill down into what you did with the first Teaching Sells launch. How did that come about and how did the process go?
It started out by developing the core pieces that were going to be in it. So think of it from a point of an information product. You're outlining, these are the items that we need to include in there. So we broke it out into modules. We knew this is the information we wanted to deliver to the customer. When all was said and done, this is what we needed to teach them. And a software side, it's similar. You have a list of features, and then you pick which features they absolutely have to be in there at that first release, and then the other ones will evolve over time. So that was the first step, was identifying what those were. And that actually came a lot to help the marketing side of it. Because by outlining what the product was going to be, we were able to clearly outline what the benefits of that product was. So one thing we do is a lot of our development of the product, whether it be a software product, an information product, or a design product like a theme, is that a lot of the development of that product itself is also helping to develop the marketing materials so that we can clearly communicate what it is that we're going to deliver in two different ways, one from a marketing perspective, one from the actual product development perspective. And that was the very first step along the process of developing Teaching Sells.
And it's a really good way of crystallizing for you and your market what the benefit and outcome and transformation is going to be of the product. So if it's a educational product, you're trying to get people from where they are to where they want to be. If it's a tool or a software product or a physical product, they actually want to solve a problem or they want to achieve something. So if you focus on those outcomes, then the features are naturally going to follow and support that. And you're talking about then creating something valuable rather than just, I've got this idea for something to sell, right?
Exactly. And that's how you build a business. That's how you build an organization. There's a very big difference between building a product and building a business. And a lot of people don't realize that. There are a lot of companies out there who have, you know, built a product, and whether it's great or mediocre or terrible, they don't really understand that that's just one part of building an overall business. The way Copyblogger has developed to an eight-figure business is by following these steps, but iteratively over and over again, and looking at what it is that we've built, what the marketplace reaction to that is, what the customers are saying and then what the customers' needs are as we grow on that. So the real kind of secret, the easy process, or the simple process that's not easy, is identifying what it is your audience needs and then delivering that in a way that you can now say, okay, here is a small piece of what you've asked for that will solve A, B, and C. Now, tell us what you want D through Z to do. And then you slowly evolve that, and it allows you to truly grow a business around the product, a true, real organization, a real business, versus just, you know, a product that you just keep adding features to.
Yeah, and in the early days, it was just you and Brian, and then it was you and Brian and Sonia. When did you add Kim with the support?
She came before Sonia.
So you had basically CEO, COO, and VP of support, even though there were only three of you, and then you brought in the content-focused Sonia after that. So there was an organization of three and then four, but really the organization grew around the roles that you were all sharing between you, right?
Exactly. And the key is that identifying what you're missing to grow your business to the next level. And by having the kind of foresight to see that, you know, for us, it really wasn't foresight. Brian and I were terrible at customer service, and Kim realized that we were going to drive all our customers away if we kept doing it. So we were good at getting the customers. We were good at pleasing the customers with the product. But when they had problems, we were not good with helping on the support side. So by identifying that through with Kim's help, that we needed somebody that is good in that role, we started to realize how to grow our, it's called an MVP, MVB, our minimum viable business, to the next piece. So that every single thing that we do in CopyBlogger follows that same model of starting out with identifying through listening very clearly to what is happening in your community, in your audience, in your industry, in the marketplace. So listen, then put something together that meets the needs of what those people are asking through. That's the do what's indicated approach. Then the next step is you iterate, you add on to that by listening again. We do that with our products, we do it with our marketing, and we do it with building our actual organization. We know what we need to add next as far as support staff, as far as development staff, what we need to grow to the next level as an organization, following that same basic blueprint that we've used for everything from marketing to product development.
Yeah, and it's interesting that iterative process and that minimum viable process works internally in the organization, works in terms of delivering products. It also works in terms of our content. So it's interesting that the philosophy is kind of in the DNA of the company. And obviously because, you know, the founders really believed in that, I think that's where it's come through. But as a lesson and a strategy for everybody listening, we try to do too much too soon. We try to get big too soon. We try to compete at scale against our competitors who we're seeing the highlight reel. We don't see the dark days that got them there, you know, the 10 years to become an overnight success. But if you do things iteratively, if you do things on a smaller scale, and if you grow organically, then you can actually be more agile. It's not just a marketing buzzword. You can actually change as the market changes. You can almost get ahead of some of the changes. But you'll see, if you pay close attention to CopyBlogger's marketing and content, we actually do validate some of these ideas just with content and see what the response is going to be like. A good example of that is if you've seen on the CopyBlogger blog about adaptive content. That's something that we've been putting out there and seeing how people respond, because if we're going to build whole features around this, then we really want to know that people are on board, right?
Exactly. Yep. And the other side of that is you can see where not only your audience is starting to understand these concepts clearer, so that when you deliver the stuff, that goes back to the listening and the feedback. So that starts at the content. So if it is causing a level of confusion, you can adjust that as you start adding in features into the product, you know that you're adding features that really meet the needs of the audience, because you've listened, and then you've gotten feedback, and you're building to that feedback.
Yeah, and the same thing with the internal audience as the external audience. With our teams and with our support structures and our organization, it's that element of co-creation. Again, it's not a top-down, we think this, therefore go do that. With the customers or even with our colleagues, we co-create with the colleagues and we co-create with our customers. We take on board feedback and we say, what do you think? Should we do this? Would this be valuable? So that's kind of the MVP process internally and externally again, isn't it?
It is. It's allowing you to, as we scale this organization, I mean, we're close to 50 people now.
Scary.
Yeah, I know. But we're still able to turn on a dime. And that's a very important thing to be able to do, especially in software industry and the content industry, which is where we are. We're a media company that produces software. So we're in several different worlds, and we have to be able to identify what it is the audience and our customers and our communities need and be able to deliver that effectively. And by staying agile, even as we've scaled, has allowed us to continue to be successful. And if you follow these same principles, whether you're building a product, whether you're building content, whether you're doing marketing, or whether you're building an organization, it allows you to scale in a way that keeps everything stable and allow you to adjust and truly be agile in the true sense of the word, not in the new buzzword sense of the word.
Yeah. And I think that agility, a lot of people focus on getting to market fast, but once you're in a market, you need that lifetime value. You need that customer loyalty. You need to keep delighting people. And that agility is how you keep them.
It is. And you see it in the successful companies versus the ones that have either we don't hear about anymore or the ones that have clearly died. I mean, in our industry, we've seen several companies that are going to remain nameless, that we've seen them scale up really fast, and you see them hiring every other day, and they're building this and doing that, and then over a course of a year, they're no longer around. Then you see other companies in the marketplace, like 37 Signals, now Basecamp, who have taken the same type of approach, building everything in a very lean, agile approach, adding people in at the right time. It's just-in-time development, just-in-time content, and just-in-time organization growth. You don't add people till you really need them. And then by doing that, you add the right people at the right time. It allows you to scale everything. And it's a simple blueprint, but it's not easy to do. It's something that requires work, it requires discipline, and it requires the ability to listen and trust your understanding and your instincts versus listening to your ego all the time that wants to be a big business with lots of people, or, I need this, I need that, will be the quickest way to tank your company.
Yeah. So we're going to drill down in future episodes into a lot of these ideas. But what are those steps that you talked about earlier so that people can take those away and start implementing them today?
The first step is to build your audience. A minimum viable audience is an audience, and it's going to be different depending on who you are and your industry. But the minimum audience that will give you the right kind of feedback and the right information that you can listen to develop your minimum viable product, which is the next step. And that may be an information product, software, whatever it is you build for your industry, or if you are in the service industry, allows you to tailor your service offerings in a way that actually meets that audience versus putting together a menu of items and then hoping that somebody will pick one. And then the final step is basically going back to step one, but you get that feedback. And then from that feedback, you adjust your product or your offering or your information, and then go back to the beginning, listen again. And it's just this continuous cycle of start off by listening to your audience, then take what the audience has said and deliver to them this that delights them, and then listen to that feedback from them so you can add the next step and grow on it.
Excellent. So thank you, Tony, and We'll drill down in future episodes. Keep listening to The Mainframe. This is Chris Garrett and Tony Clark, and this is The Mainframe.